Welcome, everyone, to this Baseball America College Podcast, sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATECsports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practices more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coach Tim Corbett and more on ATECsports.com, ATEC win every practice. I'm John Manuel. He's Aaron Fitt. Let's dive right into it, Aaron. This is our second most anticipated podcast of the year. We break down all 16 regionals. We break down the field of 64, make some picks, making it so. Are you ready to go from the West Coast?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
I'm all fueled up on Cushack, so let's make it happen, Aaron. Let's start with the Gainesville Regional. Number one seed, national number one seed, Florida, along with second seed, Georgia Tech, third seed, College of Charleston, and fourth seed, Bethune-Cookman. And first off, Aaron, let's start with the Gators. The Gators kind of are who we thought they were, but not really. I mean, this team has been, I'd say, I think it's fair to say they have the best resume. Best combination, I should say, of resume and talent.
Yeah.
But they're not as good. They're not the juggernaut we thought they were. There's not a lot of separation between Florida and everyone else. And when they were 20-1, we thought there was quite a bit of separation.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. But, you know, I think you have to cut them a little bit of slack because of injuries. I mean, you know, obviously they had the pitching situation midway through the year. It's taken Carson Woodson all year long, really, to return to form. And I don't think he's even gotten there yet. You know, he's still. I mean, but you know what? They're good enough that they don't need him to. Frankly, they don't even need him to win the national championship.
I mean, I agree.
You put Jonathan Crawford in there as your number three, and you're fine. You got your three guys. You got your ridiculous bullpen, and you're good to go. I mean, it's a ridiculous luxury to have that. But you know, I still think this team is, you know, they've built this whole season around being ready for the postseason. You know, they didn't care about the doldrums in the middle of the season. They didn't. You know, Kevin O'Sullivan was never worried about his team. I mean, he knew what he had. And here they are, and they're entering the postseason as the favorite, you know, just like they were supposed to be. And, you know, I think there's every reason to believe that this team, you know, is poised to make another deep postseason run.
It is really amazing when you think about it. There are reasons for this, as you said, going over their pitching injuries and working Whitson back in, missing 4 weeks of Hudson Randall.
They lost Tyler Thompson for the year. You know, he's an important player for them. And,
absolutely, they lost Tobias for part of the year. They had like three position players go down and a couple 2/3 of their weekend rotation. Most teams are not deep enough to withstand that. I think you're right. I think it's important to point that out. That said, we knocked, I think justifiably so, Kentucky when they didn't get a regional host, and they got sent out as a number two. They started off 22-0, 23-0. What was it?
Something like that.
And they finished 23-16. Well, you know, Florida, well, they won that series at South Carolina, and they won the next game out of that against Florida State in Jacksonville. So they headed into Ole Miss on March 30th. They were 23-2. They're 19-16 since then, Aaron.
Yeah.
That's stunning to me that they're 19-16. Even with those injuries, I don't think I'd ever put those two things together. I still think Florida is the national favorite, but it is, I think, amazing how we thought they were going to be a super team, and they're just not. And there's reasons for it. It's mostly injuries. They're starting pitching, especially, and Whitson, is a real difference maker for them, or should have been in the rotation, because they do have separation from other teams in terms of their power, with Zunino and Tucker leading the country in home runs as a team.
Right, exactly. And this is going to be, I think, a power hitters regional because their ballpark plays that way, and you've got Georgia Tech coming in here that has some power. You know, certainly they hit for a lot of power in Greensboro. They took advantage of that park's hitter-friendly conditions. And, you know, they can hurt you there with Davies and, you know, Brandon Thomas can run into one, and Daniel Palka, of course. I mean, it's a typical Georgia Tech power-hitting team. And then you've got Charleston has a lot of home runs. They've got, I think, three guys with double-digit home runs, with Marty Gant kind of being the guy that really stirs their drink. And but, you know, to me, this Charleston team isn't just your typical Charleston team where you think of a home run hitting, you know, team that's going to have to beat you with a lot of runs. this team has pretty good pitching too, John. I mean, I think they probably the best pitching staff in the SoCon statistically. I mean, they got some power arms on this staff. I think Christian Powell gives them a real chance to win that opener against Georgia Tech. It'll be a good duel between him and Buck Farmer. So, you know, all three of those teams have power. Bethune-Cookman doesn't really. I mean, they're the one team that doesn't fit with those other teams offensively. But, you know, Bethune-Cookman does have a quality number one starter, Ryan Gonzalez, who I think has a chance to at least, you know, make them competitive against Florida.
You know, the thing with Florida, I think that they have to ask going into this weekend, and Georgia Tech to a lesser extent. I like what you wrote in your regional preview about Georgia Tech. They're going on the road. The pressure's off. They're the underdog. This should be the loosest Georgia Tech team that we've seen in a long time in postseason. To me, you got to throw a left-hander at Georgia Tech. I think they did beat Ken Emanuel during the year in the ACC. I'm trying to think of other top lefties in the ACC. But between the fact that Thomas is better from the left side than the right, Kyle Wren, Palka, Davies, Zane Evans, and Brandon Thomas, the switch hitter, and Sam Dove, those are their three top right-handed bats. To me, their left-handed bats are a lot more fearsome. So if I'm Florida, I have to imagine Kevin O'Sullivan knows this. I have to imagine he also trusts Brian Johnson.
Right.
Do you anticipate Johnson being used in that game? And maybe that this would start Hudson Randall on Friday, or do you think maybe they'll go Crawford, Johnson, and then have Randall for the championship on Sunday? How do you think Florida plays that, and how do you think Georgia Tech lines up its pitching?
I think that's, first of all, really good analysis. I think you're right. I think if you can throw a lefty at Georgia Tech, that probably improves your chances. And even you look back at the Miami series, the interesting thing, though, is that Georgia Tech lost the two games the Miami's lefties started, Erickson and Ewing, but neither of those lefties really pitched deep into the game, so that wasn't really the biggest factor. You know, so I don't know what that means, but
those,
just thought I'd throw that out there.
Those guys really aren't breaking ball guys. Those are fastball changeup lefties who I would almost think are better against right-handed hitters.
That's a fair point too. Yeah, but
you got to have a lefty with a breaking ball, and Brian Johnson does have a breaking ball. I'm wondering, to me, Georgia Tech's only chance of winning this regional is if they can beat Kyle Charleston with someone other than Buck Farmer, because they need Buck Farmer to go deep in a game and, in Ray Tanner's words, battle for nine innings to beat Florida.
Yeah. I don't know that if I'm Georgia Tech, I don't know that I feel comfortable saving Buck Farmer. I just think you
got a problem.
I mean, that first game is, you know, it's if you don't win the first game, you're in trouble. And in same with the second game. I understand that. I mean, you're in the same position if you lose the second game, but you know, you just can't look past College of Charleston. I think they're too dangerous to not throw your ace against those guys.
I think, to me, the wild card for Georgia Tech is Jake Davies and Zane Evans. It's basically two of their X-factor arms are two-way guys. So when do you deploy your two-way guys so that you get the maximum value out of them as starting pitchers,
right,
and not wear them out and still get something out of them as position players? For me, that way would really be to use them on Friday. That would be my plan. But Danny Hall knows his players way better than I do. But to me, that's the way they win, is that they get Davies and Evans and win that first game. Then you have Buck Farmer. Hopefully, for your sake, you still have Alex Cruz and Johnny Holstaff on Saturday. And then you go to your deep freshman pitchers, your Cole Pitts, your Josh Hettingers, those kind of guys on Sunday. Because in my mind, you really only get to use those two-way guys once on the weekend on the mound, realistically. And, you know, that's the whole problem for Georgia Tech. They've had pitcher injuries, and really their third and fourth best pitchers are two-way guys in Davies. I think Georgia Tech's dangerous in this regional. I think if they'd been sent elsewhere, I could have seen Georgia Tech continuing their hot streak of winning the ACC tournament. But I don't see it happening here. I see Florida winning this regional. How about you?
I feel the same way. You know, I'm sticking with the Gators. But I think being able to throw Crawford in the first game, which I think they will, I think that makes a lot of sense. And then having Johnson or Randall, I think, depending on the matchup in the second game, I agree with you. I would throw Johnson against Georgia Tech if that's who they play in the second game. And then, you know, you close it out theoretically with Randall in the third game. You're looking at – it just sets up really well for them. They have so much pitching. And again, I just think their bullpen is such a separator. We've talked about it all year long, but the three guys especially, Larson, Maddox and Rodriguez, it just gives them such a huge advantage over everybody else, it seems like.
I agree. On to regional number two, that's the Raleigh regional. NC State, the 1 seed. Vanderbilt, the 2 seed. UNC Wilmington, the 3 seed. Sacred Heart, the 4 seed. Aaron, one interesting thing here is that, you know, UNCW plays up here a lot. The Seahawks, Mark Scaff went to Cary High. They recruit Cary High and the area very, very effectively. I would say that Wilmington's recruiting base is really Wake County here in North Carolina, even though that's where NC State is. So this is going to be a homecoming for UNC Wilmington. And just a month ago, or in the last month, we had Mike Fox complaining a little bit about how loud the UNC Wilmington fans were at his park, really criticizing his fans more than he certainly wasn't criticizing Wilmington's fans. Wilmington, they're interesting as a 3-seed because I think they are going to have a lot of fan support and a lot of players who probably grew up going to games at Dale Park, you know, Doak Field at Dale Park. But to me, I think that Wilmington is fairly dangerous here because they're balanced, but it just feels like NC State and Vanderbilt are a little bit too talented. To me, it's really a two-team regional.
I agree with you, and I'm intrigued by Wilmington. I am, because I think they're a nice balanced club. I think they've got some power. I really like their speed, which I think you know, is a little bit of an X factor in this regional. I mean, like NC State, you know, with NC State speed is mostly just Trey Turner, but you know, those two teams can beat you with the running game. And Wilmington likes its bullpen a lot. They can mix and match. They've got different slots. They've got all kinds of options back there, and kind of solid starters. But they don't have the power arms that Vanderbilt has in the rotation or State has. You know, you have to imagine that the kind of momentum that Vanderbilt's bringing into this thing. You know, the key for Vanderbilt is the pitching. You know, if they keep pitching the way they have down the stretch, they're really, really, you know, capable of making a deep postseason run here. But the reason that I think I like NC State in this regional is because, you know, obviously they're not going to have to use Rodon in the first game. They're going to save him for the second game. And I think they could beat Sacred Heart with a number of different guys, because I think Sacred Heart is one of the softer 4 seeds. I mean, there are only 2 4-seeds. With losing records, and one of them is Sacred Heart, so that's a favorable draw for NC State. And so I think if you've got Rodon going against Vanderbilt in the second game, theoretically, or Wilmington, whoever wins that one, then you're in the catbird seat.
Aaron, I don't think you could have said it better. It's a mutual admiration society here on the Baseball America podcast. One of my favorite inside jokes at Baseball America. but NC State really caught a break with Sacred Heart. I think you pointed that out well in your regional capsule, because the one issue for the Wolfpack is, who do you start as your third starter? You know, third starter, fourth starter all year has kind of been, you know, a revolving door for them. And to me, this is a regional where they probably only need 2 starters. They can probably save Ethan Ogburn for Sunday. And you know, their track record has been with Elliott Avin and Tom Holliday together. A couple of years ago, they didn't even use Corey Mazzoni in a regional. They saved him for the third game. He was their ace at the time. They will play the matchups, and I have a feeling you're going to see either a Logan Jernigan or a Vance Williams or one of their kind of, you know, starter-slash-reliever guys against Sacred Heart. And if they can jump out early in that game offensively on Sacred Heart, you might see NC State really try to preserve its pitching, because they really, in my mind, they only have 2 pitchers they trust. There's Rodon, right, who is a man among boys, even as a freshman. And then they have Ethan Ogburn, who they've used in relief in the past and who started and been quite consistent this year. Had a little hiccup midseason, but generally he gives you 7 innings and gives up 3 runs, and he's pretty consistent. He's a really solid – I think ideally Ethan Ogburn would be your number 3 starter on a championship Omaha team. I think he's a solid number 2 for the kind of team State is. And to me, I you know, that fact makes me pick them in this regional, because otherwise I would pick Vanderbilt. They're hot. I think they're equally talented NC State. I think they're equally athletic. They may not have quite as much speed, but they showed against Austin Maddox in the SEC tournament, when they need to steal a base, they can steal a base, or they can steal 6 bases, as they did. So you know, I really like this. I like this Vanderbilt team. I think you have to give tons of props to ATEC's own Tim Corbin for the job that he and his coaching staff did. Aaron, what are the chances that that he keeps that coaching staff intact? There are a lot of coaching openings.
Yeah.
Josh Holliday and Derek Johnson are 2 of the more attractive assistant coaches in the country. I mean, there are very few assistant coaches, I think, that you and I think who evaluate talent better and who have a track record like Josh Holliday, got a big league brother, played in the College World Series as a player, switch hitting catcher slash third baseman as a player. So he's seen the game from a number of different levels, grew up in the game with a coaching dad, and has been at NC State, Georgia Tech, Arizona State, Vanderbilt. He's been all over the country already at a young age. He's ready to go out. I mean, it's time to throw him out of the nest and let him fly on his own. And Derek Johnson's a pretty doggone good pitching coach. This might be the last hurrah for this group of Vanderbilt coaches as a group.
Yeah. Yeah, and interesting that it'll come in Raleigh where Josh's father is an assistant coach. But I agree with you. This is an interesting Vanderbilt team, and like I said, I think the key is how their arms perform because, they do have more power arms than NC State does if you're comparing those two teams. Selman and Verhagen and Beattie and, Picararo. I mean, all these guys, you've got four or five quality starting options if you need. I think Vanderbilt is one team that can afford, if they happen to fall into the loser's bracket, they can maybe still make a deep run through this thing. I think if NC State falls in the loser's bracket, I think they could be in trouble.
Completely agree.
But when I look at these two teams in their lineups, I think that I still think State just feels a little bit more dynamic offensively, and I think a big part of that is Turner. I mean, he's just such a difference maker. But Ryan Matthews has emerged as such a force in the middle of that lineup. I mean, gives them some real that power dimension. And
personal cheese bowl.
That's right, John Manuel favorite Ryan Matthews. I was just so struck watching State this week how exciting they are. I mean, I think Chris Diaz is a really good player at shortstop. Doesn't get maybe a lot of attention nationally, but boy, he's makes all plays at short, and he's a good offensive player. Leads our team in hitting. He's just a really nice player. And Danny Cannella. I've always liked Danny Cannella since he was a freshman. Just his pure hitting ability, and he's got some pop.
Yep.
Jake Fincher is so exciting in center field. He's got a great arm that he showed off several times in Greensboro. I mean, I just think they've got a lot of difference makers on this team. That's what really strikes me about them.
They're really athletic, Aaron. Their athleticism separates them, as a couple coaches told us in Greensboro. And to me, for NC State, this is a program that has not gotten to the College World Series since 1968. Ray Tanner couldn't do it. If you're Elliott Avent and you want to put the Ray Tanner, I don't know if it's a ghost, but that the fact that Ray Tanner comes to Raleigh for hot stove banquets and gets a bigger ovation than Elliott Avent ever gets. NC State is opening a Hall of Fame wing this fall, and there's all this discussion about who's going to go in that Athletics Hall of Fame. I bet you Ray Tanner is going to get in there, and I bet you that Elliott Avent will not. But if Elliott Avent wants to get in there, and I think he probably would like to, he's been at NC State longer than Ray Tanner was as a head coach. He's got more wins than Ray Tanner had. He's really done a nice job. I think that's been a pretty steady program. Get to Omaha. Ray Tanner never got to Omaha as a head coach of the Wolfpack. You take the Wolfpack to Omaha, I think Elliott Avent gets in the Hall of Fame at their opening. And I tell you, I think this is a team that can do it. They have to stay in the winner's bracket. But I kind of want the country to see the athleticism and dynamism of this NC State freshman class, because they are fun to watch.
Yes, they're
really fun, and they have speed, and they defend, and I think you hit the nail on the head with Chris Diaz. They just really, Aaron, to go to Omaha, they need one of their seniors or juniors, whether it's Andrew Sensen, Terrence Anae, one of those veteran hitters to get hot. I'm not sure it's in there for them. Andrew Sensen's been just off a little bit all year. Terrence Anae's hitting like .213, even though he has five home runs. Sensen has as few home runs as Turner. They both have four home runs. They need one of those veteran guys to get hot. If they do, I do think NC State is a Omaha-caliber team, and they are very fun to watch, if only because Rodon and Turner are so good. Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. Who are you picking there, Aaron?
I'm taking the Wolfpack, and I guess since we're on this side of the bracket, should we just go ahead and make a potential super regional matchup there too? I'll take the Gators all the way to Omaha.
I will as well, and I'm also picking the Wolfpack. Very tempted by the Commodores. It's kind of, to me, it's like a 60-40 bracket. I guess I'd say 60-35-5. I would give the Seahawks a little 5% chance there because of their balance. But I'm with you. So we both have Florida and NC State moving on to regionals, and then the Gators winning a super regional and advancing to Omaha for the third time in 3 years. which if you're NC State's freshman class, as good as they are, I've said this before on local radio here, you want to point to a class that you want to be, look at Florida's freshman class, the junior
right.
class now. Aaron, they were the number one class in the country by acclamation. It was unanimous. Everyone, when you did your surveys that year, was so wowed by their freshman class. And those guys are trying to complete an amazing run of three straight trips to the College World Series, and then they need to cap it off with a national championship. But if they do that, that's one of the epic classes
yes.
in college baseball history, isn't it?
I absolutely agree. I mean, they were, you know, they were in the finals last year. They were in Omaha the year before, and if they can win it all this year, I agree with you. I think it'll go down as one of the greats because they're going to have a lot of high draft picks too.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Let's move on to regional number three on the left side of the bracket. Number one seed Virginia, it's the Charlottesville Regional. Number one seed Virginia, number two seed Oklahoma, number three seed Appalachian State. Number four, the Black Knights of the Hudson, Army. Aaron, this is a little bit of an odd regional. You're going to let's just compare four seeds. You know, Sacred Heart 25 and 30. Virginia, which its overall season compared to NC State's is not that different. They played a three-game series in Raleigh. Hotly contested. NC State won it 2-1. You know, I guess the other differences are that Virginia maybe finished a little bit stronger. They got swept by Florida State. NC State went 1-2 at Florida State. Virginia went 2-1 in the ACC tournament. State went 1-2. Those two teams aren't that different, but Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, very comparable twos. UNC Wilmington and App State, comparable threes. But Sacred Heart and Army are not comparable fours. That's a tough bracket, I think, for Virginia.
And yet it's a little strange that NC State, who I agree with you, I think had a better season than Virginia, gets paired with the number one national seed, whereas Virginia gets paired with the number
eight
national seed. I mean, that to me was a head-scratcher. I really didn't understand that.
That's a great point. That's a great
point. Didn't mention that the other day in our first podcast. But anyway.
Especially because you have if you NCAA tournament committees that usually like storylines. Why would you not match up Ray Tanner and Elliott Avent, the last two coaches at NC State who've – you know, coaches there for the last 25, 27 years, basically. Why don't you match them up? That really did not make any sense.
Maybe it was just a matter of trying to get some new matchups. I mean, I know that those two teams have been matched up before, including in the Super Regional. Was it the Super Regional? No, it was a regional back in, I think.
It was a regional. North Carolina and North Carolina and South Carolina had several Super Regionals in a row. But, yeah, I don't think NC State and South Carolina have played in a super yet. So I agree with you. I thought that State got the break in the first round, but not in the second round.
Right. And I think you're right. I think this is a dangerous matchup for Virginia. I mean, Army's got, a couple of really quality, pitchability guys that know what they're doing here. I mean, this is a team that had they almost threw back-to-back no-hitters, if I recall. It was very close to that.
Yeah, it was very close.
You know, these guys are they're good. I mean, they don't blow you away. They don't have big arms on this staff, but I mean, with Chris Rowley, and I think that's who they will throw in the first game, and then Logan Lee, it gives them a nice 1-2 punch there in the rotation. I like, Army's dangerous. I mean, their lineup is, again, it's not going to blow you away, but I think they're pretty well built to play in that ballpark. It's team is going to use the gaps and kind of manufacture offense and, you know, kind of like Virginia does. I mean, I think Virginia to me is one of the most vulnerable to number one seeds. I think they overachieved a little bit this year. I mean, I like their team, but I don't love their team.
I'm with you.
And, I think Oklahoma comes in here as a much more physical team and a team that has a lot bigger arms, first of all. I mean, that really jumps out to you is the caliber of arms here. You're talking about, Jonathan Grays and the Stephen Okerts and, even Dylan Overton. And, I think it's just a better pitching staff, even though I like Virginia's bullpen. I probably trust Virginia's bullpen a little bit more than I trust Oklahoma's. But Okert has stabilized things for Oklahoma in the bullpen. And these two teams, of course, matched up in Super Regionals 2 years ago, and the difference is Oklahoma has most of the key guys back from that team, and Virginia doesn't. You know, it's a whole new group of players here. So Oklahoma has gone to Charlottesville before. All these guys, they're not afraid of UVA, that's for sure.
They know where the subways are. They know where the McDonald's are. They're comfortable in Charlottesville more so than they might be in other settings. They've been here and they've done that.
And you know, Max White was there, and you know, of course, Cody Rinn was a big hero in that super regional, and you know, Caleb Bushyhead, and you know, all these guys, Eric Ross, I mean, Jack Mayfield, all these guys were on that team. So I think Oklahoma's playing really well down the stretch. I think they have a lot of momentum, and I think they're the team that I like to win this regional.
They're the favorite for me as well. Any chance that App State has a chance to throw a wrench in this? I mean, we've seen App State with the pitching they have. I can never remember their coach's name. Please tell me his name again.
Pollard. Coach Pollard.
I always want to call him Pritchett, but I know his name is Pollard now. But I mean, when I talked to him at the beginning of the year, you know, they said going to LSU and winning that series, you know, they had to capitalize on it, and they did. You know, to get an at-large bid at Appalachian State is pretty loud. We know this team can pitch. We know they've got Daniel Kusev, who provides some pop, even in that ballpark. They feel like a dangerous three seed. To me, this feels like a pretty wide open regional. I picked Oklahoma. But I think if you're Virginia and you want to win this regional, you need that Friday game for Oklahoma to be white knuckle and for them to use that bullpen. I'm with you. I think Oklahoma's power arm is the separating factor. I also do wonder how Oklahoma defends the bunt. I don't know if you know that or not, because Virginia's going to bunt like crazy. They have 80 sacrifice bunts. They're almost like a Big West team in how they use the bunt, how often they bunt. So Oklahoma better work on its bunt defense, because they're going to see it out of more than just Keith Werman.
Unfortunately for Oklahoma, they've got a really good defensive third baseman, Garrett Carey. And that's, you know, this guy's in a lineup every day and he's hitting .214. It's because he can really pick it at third base.
There you go. That's an important, important reason. To me, the other thing that, that's a separator, you know, is that outside of Steven Bruno, there's just not anybody else I really fear in that Virginia lineup. And Derek Fisher certainly can lose one, Aaron, but he struck out more than 50 times. And kind of my cheese ball on that Virginia team, I kind of thought he'd have a little bit bigger year than he's had, is Brandon Cogswell. First of all, because his name reminds me of the Jetsons, Cogswell Cogs. But second of all, he's, you know, he's an athletic, lean-bodied middle infielder. I left-handed bat. I kind of like that guy. He showed me a pretty good swing when they came to Raleigh. He still gets some ABs here and there. He's got like 95 at-bats for the year, but I thought he'd be a little bit bigger part of things for them down the stretch, but it feels like they've backed up a little bit offensively. You know, Chris Turner and Jared King were their top offensive guys the first half of the year, and those two guys have kind of been in tailspins as the year's gone on.
Yeah, you're right, and I just think they're vulnerable. And the thing I worry about with Virginia is who are they going to throw in the first game? I mean, if you won in the regional, you can't throw Brandon Klein in the first game. And you know, does that mean you throw Artie Lewicki in that first game? I guess you probably do. That means you're going to have potentially Scott Silverstein starting a bracket third game.
Yeah.
And I sure don't trust him right now. I mean, the guy hasn't gone more than three innings, it seems like, in weeks, and it's his numbers are really bad down the stretch here.
There's a reason for that. He throws 83 to 86, and he doesn't have a plus secondary pitch. It's all guts and feel and touch. I really respect Scott Silverstein. I mean, he came back from significant shoulder surgery, not trying to bang on him, but I remember seeing him and thinking, how on earth is this guy getting anybody out? You know, and he got people out, more power to him. I think he's been figured out a little bit.
Yeah, and I think Shane Halley is really, 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 really key to Virginia's whole postseason run. I think that's a guy that was out with, I think it was a lat thing. I don't think it was a really serious thing, but he didn't pitch in the ACC tournament. They need him to come back, because I think he's the guy that would need to start a third game for them.
I agree. I think we talked about this before, it feels like, but we're both picking Oklahoma, right?
Yes, we are.
Both picking Oklahoma. On to the Columbia Regional, the Palmetto Apocalypse, number one seed, South Carolina, the number eight national seed, and not incidentally, the two-time defending national champion. Second seed Clemson, third seed Coastal Carolina, and submarine savant Ryan Connolly, and the fourth seed Manhattan, the Jaspers. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Cody, I can't remember his name. Who was the ace?
Chris Cody.
Chris Cody is not walking through that door for Manhattan. Who is?
Well, you know, this is a well-coached program, first of all, and they seems like every year they they're one of the top teams in that league, and this year they were again. They went 18-6 in the MAC and didn't lose a game at home. But the guy for them who's really going to have to carry the load is Taylor Sewitt, their number one starter. Went 11-1, just a really nice competitive ace that I think can give them at least a chance to compete with South Carolina. I mean, he's a senior, he's been through it. It's funny, he didn't have a huge track record of success before this year. I mean, this is really his breakout season, but he's emerged, I think, as their guy. I think Manhattan probably is, again, one of the teams that doesn't have a whole lot of a chance in this regional, I mean, the way I see it. But, they grind you a little bit. I mean, I think they battle hard, so they'll fit right in Ray Tanner Regional. They battle.
They were 4-17 at one point in the non-conference. They played four games at West Virginia. They won one. They got swept at High Point. Probably didn't like the dugouts. Got swept in four games at Maryland.
I like those dugouts at High Point.
They're cute, but they don't look particularly utilitarian.
Yeah.
Florida Atlantic, they did steal a game at Florida Atlantic to start the year, and they got swept at TCU. They've played good teams. They really haven't beaten good teams. It would be an upset if they won a game, but going from 4-17 to 33-20, whatever, and 25, and making the postseason, kudos to the Jaspers. Is anybody going to challenge South Carolina in this regional? Can Clemson or Coastal Carolina win this regional, or just going to be kind of almost cathartic for South Carolina fans? Is it going to be the gleeful celebration I think Gamecock fans think it's going to be?
It's hard to say. I think South Carolina is the team to beat in this regional. I mean, obviously they're the team to beat in college baseball. They're the two-time defending national champions.
You got to beat the man. No one's beaten the man yet.
And then South Carolina has certainly had Clemson's number here for quite a while now. They've just had the better upper hand in that rivalry lately. And right now, I mean, I think if you're South Carolina, you probably throw. I guess you throw Colby Holmes in the first game against Manhattan. I don't know. I hadn't really thought this through. And then
you can start Jordan Montgomery. I know he's backed up lately, but I mean,
good.
You should be able to beat Manhattan if you're South Carolina with your midweek starter.
Right.
I know if the health of Forrest Kumis is up in the air, his availability is up in the air. They should be able to win this regional without him, it feels like.
I think that's true. Yeah. And so, I mean, if you've got Roth, regardless, you'll have Roth going in the second game. I like Michael Roth has certainly shown that he can beat Clemson. That's one thing we know he can do.
That's right.
Coastal Carolina to me is a little bit of an X factor here because I just think with those two submariners, and that's how they won their conference tournament, is Ryan Conley and Aaron Burke. I mean, they have two submariners that both went in there and earned the win in relief in all four of those games.
Burke. Sorry. Just sounds like Aaron Burr. Sounds like you should say Aaron Burke's name as if your mouth is full of peanut butter.
I'll consider that
okay.
Next time.
Make it so.
But I mean, but I don't think this is Coastal's best team. I don't think their lineup compares with those other teams, with South Carolina and Clemson's lineup. I think Clemson is a factor here. I mean, I think you probably have already written them off because I know you're not a Clemson guy. You don't really believe in this team. Is that fair to say?
It's fair to say I don't believe in the pants and I don't believe in this team. I'm not a fan of the Clemson cut pants. Let's put it that way. I'm a fan of how Clemson and Vanderbilt are fans of the Clemson cut pants. I respect that they like the Clemson cut pants, and I respect Kevin O'Sullivan even more for not bringing the Clemson cut pants to the Gators. I think that took some guts to really step out from the Clemson mold and not use those Clemson cut pants. But
it's been a while since we've had a Clemson cut pants discussion here in the podcast. I'm glad you brought that up.
You're welcome. But I guess the thing is to me is that, Clemson has not – no one has come through – they have lots of players who are pretty good, but no one's come through to give Richie Schaefer that compliment in the lineup. He's been walked 58 times, Aaron. And that should be – it feels like they should be a more offensive team than they are. And that's my concern is I didn't expect them to be this great pitching team this year because they seem like they run out a parade of 5'10 to 6'1 right-handed pitchers who are 88-91 with a decent breaking ball. They do a nice job teaching the cutter, but outside of Steve Wilkinson, who's kind of been a good contributor, they steal some bases. They just don't do much for me offensively. I thought we'd have a bigger year out of Spencer Keyboom. I thought we'd have a bigger year out of Phil Pohl. It just really kind of hasn't happened. They're just a bunch of decent players, and they're just not a difference maker after Richie Schaefer on the mound or in the lineup. I just don't think he's enough by himself.
But I think there are a number of teams that you look at them, you know, in this field of 64 that are really good teams, and you can say the same thing. They just look like a bunch of decent players. I mean, that's my same read when it comes to Oregon or Cal State Fullerton.
Well, see,
you know?
Like I think North Carolina State and Clemson are pretty similar teams, but Carolina, NC State has Rodon and Turner, and Clemson has Schaefer. You know, Schaefer's not as he might be a little bit better player than Turner right now, but he's not as dynamic, and they haven't had anyone close to Rodon. Just comparing them in their own league, they're not too dissimilar from Florida State. I would say Florida State's infield defense is better, and they have Ramsey, and they have Benincasa in the bullpen as a separator. Just comparing them in their own league, they just don't have every other team. These teams at the top of the ACC had two or three stars. You know, North Carolina is kind of similar to Clemson, but they have Emmanuel, they have Morin, and they have Moran. That's they have three. I would say that they have three stars, like a good hockey game. I'd say they're the best team out of these teams we're talking about. But Clemson has Schaefer, and then there's no other real separator for them. South Carolina has several. Roth, Price, now that he's back in the bullpen. Walker. You could even put Marzilli in that.
Sure.
Because the other thing for South Carolina, both Coastal Carolina, which is more aggressive and has a long history under Gary Gilmore of stealing a ton of bases, and Clemson, which has no one guy, but they don't have four or five guys who run pretty efficiently. Even Schaefer, who steal a lot of bases, 10, 11 bases, and steal efficiently. It's going to be tough for either of those teams to run on Grayson Griner. He had the yips early where he had a hard time getting the ball back to the pitcher. He's really become very effective at shutting down opposing running games. It seems like Jerry Myers and his pitching staff do a great job of that at South Carolina. They just don't seem like they have an obvious flaw other than their infield defense, I think, can be a little iffy, Aaron.
Yeah, and Griner's thrown out 44% of base stealers, which just shows you. And this guy's got arm strength. I saw him. I watched one of those games on TV last weekend in Hoover, and saw him gun somebody down, and it was just a rifle. You know, I mean, he's a good player. You know, and they knew he was going to be, and he has delivered on that. He's also got some power in there and a knack for some clutch hits. I mean, he hasn't hit for much average this year, but you look at South Carolina's stats, and it's. Offensively, it's not very impressive. I mean, they're hitting 271 as a team. I mean, they're the Gamecocks. You know, they have that swagger. They
really do.
They battle, and I just think that they have the mystique. I don't know. I believe in this team, this program, this coaching staff, and the veterans who've won two national championships, Walker and Marzilli and Roth and Price especially.
I think we're both picking the Gamecocks.
Yes.
Gamecocks, Sooners, I'm picking the Gamecocks in that super regional matchup.
Yeah, I can't pick against the Gamecocks until later. We'll see if I pick against them later.
We will see. Baseball America podcast with John and Aaron. On to regional number 5, the Eugene Regional, which is really a neat thing to say, that we have a regional in Eugene, Oregon, when for most of our two tenures at Baseball America, there was no baseball, college baseball in Eugene, Oregon. But this
how
is
about,
the Georgia. This, go ahead.
How about regionals in Eugene and Gary matched up with each other?
that is awesome. I think that's a Dave Kylitz. Dave Kylitz wakes up with a smile on his face when he dreams about that. There's no fly in that ointment, Aaron, and that's Oregon. So you get the Sons of Augie. Regional in Eugene, Oregon, the 1 seed, Fullerton, the 2, Indiana State, the 3, Austin Peay, the 4. I know that all the storylines here have to do with Oregon and Fullerton. Obviously, we'll talk about those teams. What can you tell us? What are the chances of an Austin Peay or an Indiana State emerging out of this regional? Slim, none, next to none? What do you have?
No, I think it's possible. This regional to me is fascinating. I think it's one of the more wide open regionals, because I think Austin Peay is actually a dangerous 4 seed. You know, this team, they were in a regional last year. I think they were in the regional championship last year.
They were. That's right, against Mississippi State in Atlanta. Great call.
Right. Exactly. And they've got a bunch of those veterans are back from that team. You know, I really like the Greg Bachmans and Jordan Hankinses and Reed Harper, shortstops, an exciting player. They've got some speed in the outfield with Cody Hudson, Michael Blanchard. You know, it's a bunch of experienced guys in the lineup. And then on the mound, you've got a nice ace in Zach Toney. You know, I don't know that I trust the rest of the pitching staff. But, you know, they've got a couple of junior college guys who've done a nice job in that rotation. But, you know, I like the fact that they've got a bullpen anchor they can really trust. And he's a submariner, John. He's a really low slot guy, Tyler Rogers.
I wrote him up last year in the draft, I'm pretty sure. I like that guy.
You're all over him. So, I mean, I think that they have a chance to win that first game with Toney and Rogers. I don't know that they have the pitching to come out of this regional. I mean, I do think they have maybe the best offensive team in this regional, believe it or not. You know, they're a home run hitting team. They've got 60, which is, I think, among the national leaders. And this ballpark doesn't play to their strengths.
That's the issue for me, is I just don't think they've seen Pac-10 pitching. OVC yeah. pitching and Pac-12 pitching, a little bit different animals. Indiana State, meanwhile, Aaron, this is a team that, correct me if I'm wrong, they were the regular season champions in the Missouri Valley, were they not?
They were by a half game over Missouri State, and you know, and I think they're a nice balanced team. I mean, kind of like Fullerton and Oregon, they've got some grinders. I think they've got one of the better offensive players, better all around players in this whole regional with Jeremy Lucas, the catcher, who's their leading hitter and also is their leading home run hitter and does a good job behind the plate. Just a really good player and a difference maker. We were talking about that before with those
yep.
other regionals. This guy's a difference maker. And so is Dakota Bacchus, you know, their number one starter. You know, he's got better stuff than the other number one starters in this regional. I mean, he'll get up there 92-93, which you won't see from certainly Alex Cadell or Dylan Floro. You know, and then he competes and throws strikes and really, really gives them a chance to, I think, upset Fullerton in that first game.
I'm just going to admit, I'm a real big Rick Heller fan, coach at Indiana
yeah.
State. I thought he did a really nice job at Northern Iowa. That program got taken, you know, eliminated, kind of rug pulled out from under him. The timing ended up being fortuitous for him that Lindsey Meggs did a nice job building a foundation at Indiana State. Then he went to UW, and Heller got the job at Indiana State, kind of built on what was there, has taken that next step. They're a really, really neat story. That seems like a dangerous team, Aaron. And to me, the thing is that's dangerous is that Oregon and Fullerton, they beat teams by executing, not by out-athleting them.
Right.
Those two teams, as you pointed out last week, are just so similar. I don't even know if you could have a favorite because Fullerton, I think if you wanted to go somewhere, if you're Fullerton, if you had to go on the road, you wanted to go to a park that played big where home runs and power weren't a factor because that's
right.
not a J.D. Davis. They don't have any power. It's all dink, dunk, bunts, hit and run, pushing it, and playing West Coast ball, isn't it?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And you know, it's going to be so fun if they do get to play Fullerton, you know, just to see those two teams engage in a chess match, you know, Horton and Vanderbilt.
If I were ESPN, I would pay Augie a lot of money to go be the color analyst of that game. I guess they hired Dave Serrano to be a studio
yeah.
analyst.
There you go.
They
yeah.
should send Coach Serrano out to Eugene to watch the players he recruited and also the coaches that he used to work for and with play against each other. That would just be – the insight that you would get there would be pretty awesome if you could give Dave some truth serum so that he would make sure that he didn't hold anything back, you know?
Yeah,
maybe you
yeah.
wouldn't want to describe what a team is doing because your Tennessee team would be doing it. So I would love to get inside the heads of those coaches and really watch the game with a guy who used to coach Fullerton and knows what those guys are all about and really just get the cat and mouse, you know, the X
right.
and O's that you usually don't talk about in baseball.
And the thing that gives me a little bit of concern with both of these teams is that I don't know how much I trust the pitching after their number one guys. You know, I mean, we've talked before about how freshman pitchers often hit the wall, and Fullerton's got two in their rotation behind Floro with Graham Wiest and Kenny Matthews. And I think Matthews pitched really well last week against Long Beach, and Wiest didn't pitch as well. But and Oregon also has, you know, a freshman and is this number two guy in Jake Reed.
Yeah.
And you know, and Oregon's number three spot has been an issue for them all year long. So, you know, the key for me is I think I trust Oregon's bullpen a little bit more. I think with Tommy Thorpe and Jimmy Scherfe back there, in particular. Those two guys, I think, those are the two guys they rely on in that bullpen, and I think both those guys are pretty trustworthy. They can shorten games a little bit.
I'm just stunned looking at Fullerton's stats and just seeing how few guys they walk all year. What amazing!
Yeah.
Who's their pitching coach this year?
It's Kirk Sarlos. He's done a really good job.
Holy cow, Kirk Sarlos! Are you kidding me? How did I not know that? That's just awesome. I think I'm actually following Kirk on Twitter, so I don't know how I whiffed on that. But what an amazing job! They have 100 walks and 480 innings. That's just with amateur pitchers. I don't care how hard or how not hard they throw. That's pretty impressive. And if you
compare that with Oregon, it has 218 walks and 531 innings. You've got more than twice as many walks. That could be a real difference maker.
It could be. And also the Oregon offense seems like they kind of are predicated on taking a dose, the walk, bunting. I know they're a little bit more aggressive offensively than maybe they've been in past years, but something's going to have to give there, Aaron. I picked Oregon to win this regional. Now you've almost talked me into the Titans. I think I'm switching my pick and picking the Titans. You son of a gun.
This is one of the regionals that I've got a bunch of crossouts on my sheet here. I think I've flip-flopped on this one about eight times because at one point I even thought about taking Indiana State because I think Indiana State's pitching depth is an asset in this regional in addition to the other things we talked about. But I think I like the Titans too. I mean, it's for the reasons we talked about. I mean, I just think the fact that you're right, the fact that they throw strikes, that's the key to their whole deal this year is they really pound the strike zone. It's going to be hard for Oregon necessarily to manufacture offense against a team like that because Fullerton does play good infield defense. They're fielding 975, and Oregon's doing even better. They're fielding 980. So,
yeah,
I mean,
it's unbelievable.
Neither of these teams are going to give you anything. I mean, I don't know. This is a coin toss for me.
All right, forget it. I'm going back to the Ducks. You can have the Titans. I'll go. We need to have some different picks here. I'm going to pick the Ducks because I am a Ryan Healy is on that personal cheese ball list as well. So
I guess I got to
stick with Ryan Healy.
You know what? I don't know. I mean, the team I've got written down here on my sheet officially is Oregon.
That's what I have written down.
And I have right now. Next to him, I have bullpen written down. I think that Thorpe and Scherfe group is nice, but you know, I'm going
to
jump
back to this one.
All right,
let's come back to this one. I think we've explained to you that regional number five, the Eugene regional, is up in the air.
Up in the air.
It's up in the air. Let's go to the Gary regional. Another phrase we never thought we'd say: the Gary, Indiana regional, home of the Railcats. Not the home of Purdue. It's the home of the Purdue Boilermakers. Purdue the 1 seed, Kentucky the 2 seed, Kent State the 3 seed, Valpo the 4 seed. We can stop making jokes about the Cubs and Purdue being joined at the hip. We have to take down our Purdue media guy from the mid-'80s that has the Boilermaker with a giant head running down to first base and then taped up next to it the doppelganger of the Purdue Boilermaker, Alan Dykstra.
Right.
We can take that down now. We can retire that. Purdue is for real, Aaron. They've shown it all year. If you're going to be the best team, if you're going to be a number one seed of the Big Ten, dominate the Big Ten, they did. Play a challenging non-conference schedule, they did. Win those games. Memo to Michigan State, win those games. If you're going to go on the road right. They went to UCLA and won a game. Almost got swept, the Scott Griggs blow up there, but they were very competitive in that series. I thought Purdue earned a number one seed. They certainly earned being a regional host. They're a great story in college baseball. They got a tough regional, Aaron, with Kentucky as a 2 seed. Arguably could have been a 1, should have been a 1. I would say more like could have been. I think it's very close between Miami, Kentucky, Mississippi State. We talked about that on Monday.
I don't think it's close at all. I don't think Miami has any business being in that conversation, but we've discussed that already.
You're probably right about that. I think they're in the conversation, but I think that they're third in that conversation. But Kent State, very dangerous team, Aaron. Let's get out a shout-out to Valpo. They haven't been to regionals since the late 1960s. Tracy Woodson, who went to NC State, now played in the big leagues, now the head coach of Valpo. Pretty nice feather in your cap if you're Tracy Woodson for 2 years in a row, second or third-round pick, whatever Kyle Gadell was last year, and now this year you get the regionals. This is a program that's trending up.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, I had a chance last year when they came out to the West Coast to see those guys. And, you know, I like the way they played. You know, they just, you could tell that, you know, he's gotten them, you know, to buy into what he's trying to do out there. And, you know, they, I think they've got a nice offense. I think they've got some balance in that offense, 1 through 9. I think they can execute and, you know, put the bat on the ball, and they can run a little bit. On the mound, you know, you're looking at, you know, it's a solid three-man rotation. I mean, three guys, Kevin Wild and Tyler Dejean and Kyle Wormington, you know, who've had really solid years for them. I mean, this team, they've got some arms. I mean, they're gonna compete in this regional, but you know, at the same time, you certainly, they've got their work cut out for them, because this is a boy, this is a tough regional. I mean, these are three really good teams in addition to Valpo.
Aaron, I'm gonna give something away right now. I picked Kent State to win this regional, and
yeah.
I like Purdue and I like Kentucky, but I picked Kent State. I'll tell you why in a minute, but you tell people a little bit. You know a little bit more about this team. I'm basically picking them for their pitching and for the fact that they've been battle tested. They were good in a regional. Was it last year or the year before down in Austin?
It was last year, yeah. And they've been, these seniors, this is their fourth straight regional, you know. So
you made a great case about that in a three strikes one Monday, about how successful this was, that their senior class, right, had been.
That's right.
At,
yeah,
Kent State, and it's pretty epic how good this class has been.
Absolutely, it has been, and you know, I think the fact they've got, kind of like, you know, like a poor man's version of Florida, if you want. I mean, they've got key guys at skill position players. David Lyon behind the plate, who's one of their best players. I mean, does a great job handling that pitching staff. He's got some power. I mean, he's, you know, if you want to call him the poor man's Mike Zunino, you can.
Sure.
And then Jimmy Ryder, I mean, is a guy that Scott Strickland compares to. He might have used the phrase poor man's Nolan Fontana. He's that kind of player. He's really steady defender and undersized, but just does a lot of good things for you. And you know, this team has the key, of course, is they've got a number one guy in David Starn, a left-hander that I think can beat Kentucky. And I think he will beat Kentucky. I think David Starn is going to go in there and win that opener, which is why I'm taking Purdue to win the regional, because I think, you know, Purdue, first of all, if they have to play Kentucky, I think they match up well with them, because they've got a, you know, most of their key guys are right-handed hitters. I mean, they have some lefties in there too, but you know, Kentucky's key arms are lefties. So and I think that you know, with Kentucky out of the way, if Purdue wins that opener, I think they'll be in good shape. I wonder what they're going to do with their pitching. You know, if they're going to start Connor Podkol in the first game, or just go with a Hayes or a Breedlove. But if they can save Hayes and Breedlove for the next couple of games, then I think it sets up well for them.
I agree. I think to me, the reason I picked Kent State is that I do believe in Purdue. I think they're quite good. There's not a lot of real weaknesses other than they don't have a power arm at the front of that rotation. But to me, I did think that Starn could beat Kentucky. And I thought that, you know, Scott Strickland's, the team is defensive oriented. They're a very good defensive team. Well, very good. They're a good defensive team. But looks like on paper they have enough pitching depth, reading what you've written about them all year. So they have enough pitching depth, and just enough offense. Just for comparison's sake, you talk about Jimmy Ryder. You know, Mike Zunino led the SEC with 23 doubles, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Ryder's got, he has 27 doubles. He's second in the country. Zunino's tied for second in the country with 27 doubles. He led the SEC in league play with 13. Those are all the numbers in my head. Jimmy Ryder's right behind him with 26.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, it just feels like Kent State's a deep, I like the senior-laden thing. I like that. They've got a lot of guys with their man strength. I wanted to pick an upset somewhere. I wanted to pick Purdue going in. I would love to see Purdue. I'd love to see a Big Ten team get to Omaha. I think it'd be good for college baseball. But I wound up picking Kent State, but you're picking Purdue. And then we still got to decide. I'm putting you on the line right now. Oregon. Who am I writing on the line there, Aaron? Oregon or Cal State Fullerton? I am writing Oregon on my line.
All right, I'm taking Cal State Fullerton.
All right. So then you're looking at a Cal State Fullerton versus Purdue super regional. I presume that would be in Gary or somewhere thereabouts, right?
It could go either way, I think. I mean, I think both those teams – well, I guess it would be Gary because they hosted.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They're one seed, so yeah.
You got to wonder, might be something to check on, is that see if Purdue has plans to host a super, if they can even host a super regional. I would have Kent State at Oregon. So in that case, I'm picking Oregon to get to Omaha. Who are you picking, the Titans or the Boilers?
This is the year, John. I'm going to take the Boilermakers.
Wow. Upset City. I don't even like Jim Delaney, but I would like for that to happen for the Big Ten. I think it'd be good for college baseball if the Big Ten cared about college baseball. And I think the league is trying to care, but as usual, they're trying to care in their own way. It's a Big Ten kind of thing to do. We got to speed up the pace here, Aaron. What a shock. We're taking too long talking about college baseball here on the Baseball America podcast. We're at the 57-minute mark of this phone call, and let's go right to the Houston Regional. Rice, Arkansas, Sam Houston, Prairie View. Prairie View A&M, TFCO, Aaron, thanks for coming out. It doesn't seem like it doesn't feel like Prairie View has a shot to win a game in this region.
I don't think so. I just think they're going to be overmatched. I mean, these are, the competition is too strong. I mean, I think Prairie View, as usual, the one thing that they've got really going for them, I think, is they can beat you with the speed a little bit, but they're not even one of the real speediest teams in the coming out of the SWAC. I mean, it's not like a Jackson State that really can drive you mad with the speed. So, I think Rice wins that game. I don't know who they throw in the opener. I mean, maybe an Andrew Banach. But you've got Reckling probably for game two against Arkansas or Sam Houston. I just think it, again, having a manageable number four seed probably sets it up pretty well for Rice. So I like the Owls in this thing. I mean, I think it's very, very compelling because I think Arkansas also has very, very similar pitching. The one thing I'm a little bit worried with Arkansas was I feel like Ryan Stanek was a little banged up down the stretch and wasn't as dominant, certainly, as he was earlier in the year. So they're going to start Baxendale in their opener against Sam Houston State. Bearcats could win that game. I mean, Bearcats have beaten some teams this year. They've got some quality wins. They've got some three quality guys in the rotation that they like. And a good bullpen and a solid lineup. I mean, they're just a solid team. But Arkansas still strikes me as a team that I could see getting to Omaha. I could see winning this regional. I could see winning a super regional because I still like their talent. I like their pitching depth. I think both Rice and Arkansas have really good bullpens. I think Rice has one of the very best bullpens out there. I think it compares with Florida's and, North Carolina's and some of these other teams we've talked about. So for me, that's still the difference maker. I'm taking Rice.
I picked Arkansas for a lot of the reasons you just said, even though Stanek has been down lately. Boy, DJ Baxendale got a terrible start. He may not be drafted too well, but he's pitched quite well the last month, 6 weeks of the year. I thought getting Baxendale back, the fact that, like you wrote about like a month and a half ago, Arkansas still doesn't have that identity. This is their last shot at that. I just feel like they're too talented. I feel like they measure up talent-wise with Rice very well. Doesn't feel, Aaron, to me like either of these teams has really hit on all cylinders this year. Is that fair? Is that a fair statement?
I mean, I guess so. I mean, Rice, I feel like, has had a really nice year, but they haven't offensively. I guess they haven't really hit their stride completely. So I guess that's fair to say. I mean, I think Michael Rattery has come on a little better down the stretch, but he's still hitting just .231. I mean, he's a key player for them going forward in the postseason. They need to get more consistent production out of him, like they got at times down the stretch. This team, their offensive numbers don't frighten anybody. But I do like the fact that I think Christian Stringer and Forge Steinbach are good middle guys that make things happen and are kind of spark plugs for them. This team plays very good defense, and I do like their pitching a lot. I think, Austin Kubica has become much more consistent in the second half of the year. The one thing that they don't have is a lot of left-handed pitching, but they do have Taylor Wall, who's gotten a lot better against lefties than he used to be. And this was a guy that used to be more effective against right-handed pitchers because he's a fastball changeup guy, but he's developed a good little slider. I think that's a key development for them.
It's very close. It was a tough call for me. I went ahead and picked the Razorbacks. You're picking Rice. In the last regional bracket on that left side, Baylor, the one seed, so the Waco regional, Baylor, Dallas Baptist, Texas Arlington, and Oral Roberts, three faith-based institutions, and then Texas Arlington, which is the hot team here, really, Aaron. Texas Arlington won 7 in a row, including winning the Southland Tournament to end the season. You got DBU that won a regional on the road last year, battle-tested. Oral Roberts, which has been going to regionals every year since Oral Roberts himself passed away, the founder of the school. And they've been going to regionals for a long time at Oral Roberts. But Baylor still feels like, I don't see like to them, Oklahoma is to Baylor as Miami is to North Carolina this year. Oklahoma is Baylor's kryptonite. They have 14 losses all year, and five of them are to Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because Clemson is like that for Florida State. I mean, there's some teams that just have other teams' numbers.
Yeah, there you go. So I don't see Oklahoma in this regional. So while I really have quite a bit of regard for the other three teams, you know, DBU just being consistent, Arlington, what they've done, getting hot, and the talent they have. What's his name? Preston Beck.
He's the
best hitter in this regional, is he not?
Yeah, he might be. I think that's a good point. He's dangerous. I mean, he's in on the short list with you know, Josh Lutie or Max Muncy come to mind for Baylor.
But to me, this is Baylor's regional to win, and it's
yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to be a walk. I'd be surprised if they lose a game in this regional.
I think I feel the same way. I think they're the most complete team here. I will say that you got to watch out for the Mavericks, like you mentioned, of Texas Arlington. I mean, look at some of these midweek games they've won this year, John. Oklahoma, Texas, Baylor, they beat. They beat TCU. They beat Texas A&M. I mean, this is a team that has played quality competition and done okay. They also lost a couple of games to Dallas Baptist. So there's a, you know, that head-to-head factor. But this is a, you know, they're a, like you said, they've got some, you know, they've got that one difference maker with Preston Beck. I think they could cause some trouble for people in this regional. But the other thing is, I think Oral Roberts is a little bit of a trap game because it's a trap. Oral Roberts does have arms. I mean, that's one thing that they've really got going for them. I remember when I saw them at Cal State Fullerton earlier this year. You know, the Rob Walton thought they could be dangerous if they got into a regional with Drew Bowen and Alex Gonzalez and Kurt Giller, especially those three guys. Have power stuff. I mean, those guys can bring it. They've got more power stuff than Baylor's going to throw at them, you know. And Oral Roberts has some power in their lineup too, with Jared Schlehuber and Jose Trevino and Cam Schiller. I mean, those are three guys who can hit the ball out of the ballpark. So Oral Roberts is a factor here.
I think those are all good teams. I think Baylor has been so consistent. It would be shocking to see the Bears just crash and burn in a home regional. Certainly, yeah. Has happened before. But it'll be shocking to see it happen with this team.
And we should mention Dallas Baptist too, because I know we're trying to pick up the pace. But I mean, this team was in Super Regionals last year, you know, and they've got a bunch of those guys back. I mean, not a lot. They lost a lot of their key guys, but they do have, you know, Austin Elkins and, you know, Landon Anderson and these guys. Ryan Bamanish, it kind of hurt them when he was out for a little while this season, but I think he's back now and he's been their best hitter, really, when he's been healthy. So, you know, I think they've got some arms there. I mean, it's not big arms, but they're guys that know how to win and compete. They're you know, again, the fact that they won a regional last year means you got to take them seriously.
I agree. But we're both picking Baylor, correct?
Yes.
So I have Baylor hosting Arkansas in a super. You have Baylor hosting Rice. Where's your pick there in this super regional matchup?
John, I like the Owls. I just think they have superior arms, and I think they are good enough to shut down Baylor's offense. As good as Baylor's offense is, and I think it's good, very good. I think Rice can shut them down and manufacture enough runs against the, you know, the Turleys and the Blanks.
I would have Baylor against Arkansas. I would be picking the Bears. I guess I'm going chalk on the bracket for me, Aaron. I have Baylor, Oregon, South CAC, and Florida in Omaha. Mm. You have Rice, Purdue, South Carolina, and Florida, correct?
That's right.
Who do you have winning that side of the bracket, the Gators?
The Gators. I'm sticking with my preseason pick. Bring on the hate mail, South Carolina fans.
I wouldn't say that if I were you.
No, don't bring it on, please. Seriously, I have all kinds of respect for the Gamecocks. Please, I don't need to hear from you.
But I'm picking the Gators as well on that side of the bracket. I would actually rank it Florida, South Carolina, Baylor, Oregon, if I'm ranking my side of the bracket. I'm thinking you would go Florida, South Carolina, Rice, Purdue?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's where we have to leave this podcast. We're going to have to do a second part of the podcast, Aaron, because we just have too much fun talking about it, and you've got a chat to do and all kinds of things. So we're just going to leave.
We're not capable of knocking out an entire 64-team thing in an hour. It's just not possible.
We're physically incapable of doing it. I completely agree. And we tried. I thought we tried. But great stuff. It's just so much fun talking college baseball. We want to remind people this Baseball America College podcast is sponsored by ATEC, the baseball training machine company. At ATEC, we're committed to delivering tools to coaches to help train and develop players. Visit ATechSports.com to learn about training machines that can help make your practice more effective and efficient. See training tips and practice drills from Vanderbilt head coaches Tim Corbett and more on ATechSports.com. ATech win every practice. Aaron, have you decided which regional you're going to, Los Angeles or Eugene?
I'm going to Los Angeles, staying local this week, and we'll kind of see how it goes as far as a super regional plan.
I like that plan. I will be bouncing back and forth between Raleigh and Chapel Hill. We'll have interns and Jim Schoenard covering every game at those regionals. You'll be in Westwood. We'll have Michael Lemaire, esteemed alumnus of our intern program, on the farm at Stanford. I like using all these stupid nicknames of these colleges that have for their campuses. Should be a lot of fun, and we'll come back on the next Baseball America College podcast, break it down the right side of the bracket, and later this week, draft podcast. Myself, Nathan Rohde, Connor Glassy, and Jim Callis will make picks that we think the team should do in the first round of the 2012 draft. For Aaron Sitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.